Welcome back. We're at module 2, and I want to tell you, I'm really happy that you're here right now. Beyond happy, I want to congratulate you, because a lot of people get a course, get a training, and they get one little bit of information, oh, that's good, and they move on, right? Or they put it on hold, and they think back a year later, like, oh my God, I never finished that course. If you're on module 2, that means you have momentum. You've already done exercises. You've already learned. Maybe you're awakened to things you already knew. Maybe I'm nothing more than a reminder service, and I'll be okay with that. I'm okay if I'm reminding you who you're supposed to be, the man you're supposed to become, the woman you're supposed to be. You know, I'm going to digress here for a second at the beginning of this module, but in my late 40s, I was with my dear friend Tony Robbins at his house, and I was 47 or so, and I was going through a big transition in my life. And Tony looked me right in the eye and said to me, who will you become in your 50s? Here's the thing, I've heard that a million times, but when he asked me at that moment of my life, it hit me in a way that transformed everything. I started writing down who I wanted to become, not what I wanted to achieve, how much success I wanted, what I wanted to accomplish. I wanted to write down who I wanted to become, the father, the future relationship I'd have, the leader, the friend. And I start doing it, and I reconstructed who I was going to be. So when we think through that lens, like, who do we want to become? These are the type of capabilities that get us there. So I'm so honored that you spend this time with me, but more so happy for you that you can gain these capabilities and put them into play. Remember, all these little things will add up to the big things. And what are the big things? You living into your full potential. You being the man, the woman you're supposed to be. And together, I think we can make that a reality. You know, we're at a place where the world, all of us, we want more, right? We want more passion, more desire, more dreams, more goals, more success, more income, more freedom, more time for family, right? But how do we get there? Now, in this section, we're going to be talking about identifying, uncovering, exposing, and killing what I call the villain within. Now, you could call it whatever you want. You could call it self-doubt. You could call it insecurities. You could call it imposter syndrome. You could call it fear. Whatever it is, we all have that inner voice that has held us back and cost us too much already. Now, we'll talk about that in a moment. I also want to tell you that I've come across two things that can help that more than anything else. And that is your state of mind and your level of confidence. Now, I'm going to get to both of those deep. So in this section, we're going to cover the villain, identifying, and we're going to start building a different state of mind, a different level of confidence. Can those two things change in a moment? Of course. Did you ever have something happen in a moment and all of a sudden you're in a completely different state? You went from a little down, not sure, something happened and you feel amazing, you feel in love, you're happy. It happened in a moment. What if we could trigger that state of mind shift? What if we could trigger to go from low confidence to high confidence in a moment? I'm going to show you that confidence isn't something we're born with. A state of mind and happiness and abundance is something we're born with. It's something we create. My buddy Brendan Burchard always says that power plants don't have energy. Power plants create energy. So we have the ability to create new state of minds, to create levels of confidence. And that's where the world really changes. But I want to share something with you, and I never usually do this. But how important is the villain that lives inside of us? Like, should we really call it that? Is that kind of cheesy? Is it too big of a word? How many times has that inner voice stopped you from moving forward? Told you you're not good enough. It's not the right time, right? You should be happy with what you have. You're blessed. You should be grateful. Daniel, you have a job and it's during COVID. You should be happy. Just sit and let the world do what it does. You know, there's something I've been saying for years, but we have an option in life, guys. We can either be the thermometer of life or the thermostat. Think about that. Do you want to be the thermostat where wherever life goes, economy good, economy bad, people are happy, people are sad? Or do we want to be the thermometer where we adjust the temperature, that we're in control? Think about that, right? If we can be in control, if we become the thermometer of life, and that's really the pieces that we're working on, we get to control our destiny. So what is the villain within? I'm gonna tell you, as I grew up, not having money, dreaming of more, right? And just because my path is my path, and some of you have a way worse path, and some of you don't, it doesn't matter, right? It's all our own journey. But I have to tell you, in my path, in my journey, there's been so many times that inner villain has said, you're not that smart. Come on, you lived in a trailer park as a kid. You know, I lived in 6 months of my life, maybe 8 months. My dad said it was a year. I didn't think it was a whole year. We lived in a bathroom. Literally, my dad had a house and he couldn't afford to put heat in the house. Had electric, but not heat. So we plugged in a little electric heater and we would literally sleep in the bathroom. We'd drag in a mattress at night. And I'm telling you something like legit. Like, this isn't a story for stage. This is us talking right now. You know how uncomfortable it was? We'd drag in a little mattress in the bathroom, plug in the electric heater. I'd sleep next to my dad. If one of us had to go to the bathroom, one of us would walk out and stand out and shiver. The electric cord used to go in through the where the door handle would be, the hole in the door, so even open in the morning. And then I'd get dressed and go to school. And there was times we went to school. There was times we went to school and my dad had a pickup truck that was probably 20 years old at the time. The back window was busted out of it, had a piece of plastic on it. The heater didn't work. I mean, it was just a nightmare. You wake up, you're freezing, you get in a car, you're freezing. Then I wouldn't let my dad drop me off at school in the front with that truck. So he dropped me off a block from school, and it couldn't be just one block because kids could see me down the block. So it would be like two blocks down the street. I'd make him drop me off. So I was cold when I woke up. I was cold going to school. I was cold walking into school. And some days I didn't have lunch money. And again, not poor me. I don't mean that in any way. That was whether you believe whatever your path is from. I believe that's what God had planned for me. I'm the man I am because of that. I wouldn't change one bit of it. And you don't have to walk, you know, in the snow uphill both ways from school, like the old story goes, to be there. But I want to tell you that villain that was created during those times, that my dad worked really hard. I watched him work hard, but couldn't get any results, even though he put the time and the effort in. He was productive, but he wasn't productive in the right way, like we talked about in the beginning. He put the time. I learned at a really young age that, hard work has nothing to do with success. My dad and my mom worked their butts off to have nothing. So it's the right kind of work, right? Practice the wrong golf swing every single day. I don't care how hard you practice. If it's the wrong golf swing, you're only gonna anchor in and learn how to do it wrong, right? So I learned that at a young age. But my dad gave me a lot of beliefs that were really tough. He helped build this villain. And then my mom, who I love dearly, she's amazing, but my mom was under the impression as young, like, if you're born with money, money makes money, and rich people are lucky, and not in a mean way. She just was never taught anything different. So all these things go in and they build this villain and the negative news, and if you don't go to college, you're not gonna make it. And my guidance counselor telling me, ooh, you're not taking your SATs and going to college? Maybe you could work at the local factory at minimum wage, they're hiring. Like, all these things go in. Doesn't matter where it comes in from, we're gonna identify that today, but it created this villain inside of me saying, you're not that smart, you don't come from money, you didn't go to college, look at you, dreamer, oh, big shot, you're gonna be wealthy someday and retire your mom. Like, literally, I feel like there was a protagonist inside my head telling me, stop it, you're not enough. You're not enough, other people are enough, you're not. I don't know if you've ever felt that, but I did. And I didn't listen to that. And something I want to share right now that I never do, and I don't say this to brag, and I don't do this to boast. And I don't know if I've ever shared, I haven't shared this in a long time, but I want to share with you that when I first moved to Phoenix, I was already on my way to be successful, but I was starting in this industry, in the knowledge industry, going from cars and real estate and all those, you know, and tow truck company, going into sharing my knowledge like I'm doing with you today. Tony shared his knowledge with me, changed my life. I wanted to do the same. I moved out here to Phoenix. I lived in an apartment. I was commuting back and forth from New York to Phoenix, and I was selling cars there and doing real estate. I'd take that money, come out to Phoenix, put it into a company that seemed like it had a bottom in it. Like I'd put the money in and just poop, it'd be gone. And I'm hustling, trying to make it work. And I used a lot of the money up I had saved trying to break into this knowledge industry because it wasn't like it was today. I couldn't turn on a camera and go live with you. The only way to get my course out to the world back then is I had to do an infomercial. People say, why'd you do an infomercial? Because there was no social media. 22 years ago, there was no Facebook and Instagram or YouTube. There wasn't even MySpace. It was either like smoke signals and carrier pigeon or an infomercial. And that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. And taking my eye off one business. Anyway, I was hustling back and forth. And I remember that moment of wondering if this could really work for me. Like, could I make this happen? So I move out here and I'm using up all the money, a lot of the money I'd saved, and hundreds of thousands of dollars to get this momentum going. I'd make 10 grand flipping a house, I'd put it in the account, and poof, felt like it was gone in 2 minutes. Commuting back and forth, New York, Arizona. And I remember one Saturday afternoon, probably 19 years ago. I know because I've been in Phoenix for 20 years now this month. About 19 and a half years ago, I was living in a little apartment on one side of town, you know, just trying to get stuff done. And I got in the car and I drove to an area of town they called Paradise Valley here in Arizona. And I was driving through these neighborhoods and I'm like, oh my God, look at these houses. And I've envisioned a family and I envisioned these backyards and playing with kids and basketball. And I saw a dad and his son shooting hoops in like their own basketball court. And I was like, oh my God, and these big yards and these houses that were millions and millions of dollars. And I remember driving, I drove down this street called Wilkinson Road. And I remember looking at these houses, and then I drove down another street, and then I drove down a street called McDonald, and another one called Jackrabbit. And I just started going street after street, and I'm like, and I envisioned, and I started picturing me living in that area. Not because I wanted to brag, not because I wanted to be a big shot or host big parties. It just felt like, you know, I'm not big. I don't have fancy cars. I drive a pickup truck. I drive a white Ford pickup truck. That's my only car. I had a Tesla. I sold it. I drive a pickup truck every day. If you know anything about me, I wear a t-shirt every single day. I have a beautiful watch because my wife bought it for me as a wedding gift. But I love a home that where my family can be and having that stability I didn't have as a kid, where I moved 20 times and never really lived in a nice house and didn't play sports with my family because nobody had time. And I just envisioned this. And how crazy is it? Years later, I buy a house on one of those streets that I drove down and I bought my dream house. That kid that had that villain within telling me he wasn't good enough, he should have went to school, had nothing. And I pulled up a video that one of my team members shot with his drone of my house. And I want to share this with you. I don't share that to be like, oh, hey, look at me. You don't see me posting that all over Instagram and social, like, look at my house, I'm rich, that's not my gig. I share that to show you what's possible when you realize there's a villain within that holds us back. You know, and I could feel amazing about that is because I also, like I said, just in the last 12 months alone, we did so much for the world, right? From Underground Railroad to heading towards 10 million meals to building a school in Africa. All of this from a kid who lived in a tiny little town, who didn't have a degree, a college degree, who didn't come from money, who had self-doubt and had this villain. But the reason I share this and the reason I wanted to set this segment up this way is because that villain almost won 100 different times. Literally, this villain almost won 100 different times. I was an inch away from quitting so many times when it didn't go right, when I thought I was doing the right thing and it didn't work. Every single time, like Daniel shared, like I'd find a way to, like it just didn't work. And I was like, it's not for me. Maybe I should be happy where I'm at. Maybe I should go get a job. Like a million times that damn villain almost won. So when I seem passionate about this, I believe we have a foe. We have something living inside of us that is trying to fight us every single day, and we can win. The inner hero can win. And I want to show you in this segment, because that villain has already cost you too much. That self-doubt, that fear, that questioning yourself, that imposter syndrome, whatever you decide to call it, it's already cost you too much. I want to take this moment here and ask you to play full out with me on this. Use my silly analogy, but think about those pieces and what's possible for you if you don't allow the villain to win. You see, we talked about state of mind and confidence. And I'm gonna circle back to them. We're gonna go real deep on confidence and state of mind later. I'm gonna set this this framework up of the inner villain first. You see, I believe confidence isn't something that's on a scale of 1 to 100. I believe if your confidence is at a 90%, you play small. I believe if your confidence is at 90%, you play small. Think about this. Think about the days where you go for it. You make the sale. You take it, like you take uncomfortable action. Those are the days where your confidence, your courage is up, and you just go for it. But a lot of times, if your confidence is off a little bit, you really ask for the next level. You take uncomfortable action. You go after the thing that fears that you're a little afraid of. No, you kind of play okay. I'm not saying you retreat and go backwards, but you just kind of let it roll. You know, we had Jesse and we had Daniel. I keep picking on them, and we'll have more of you on here as we go. But if your confidence is down a little, Daniel goes, you know, I do have the job. The new, doing my own thing might not work. Ah, the hell with it. Let me hit this game up and I'll think about it later. I can equate confidence to so many times in my life where I didn't go after it. When the confidence was up, I did. So what you're going to see as we evolve through this section is one of the underlying foundations is to build a confidence that you don't have peaks and valleys, right? Think about that, right? Think about life. Like, I don't want this course to be something that jacks you up this week and then, and then until something else comes along. If we adapt the right habits, if we implement the pieces that we know we need to shift, then all of a sudden those peaks and valleys become more of a 45-degree angle. It goes from the adult roller coaster to the little kid roller coaster to all of a sudden just a 45-degree angle. Will there be bad days? Hell yes. But will you approach them differently? Will a bad day equate to you being just lost for years? No, not anymore. And that's why we build this, and that's why I've gone upstream so much to work on how do we build this layer of confidence? How do we build and have the ability to change a state of mind in a moment? And this is the foundation. So let's talk about that inner villain. That inner villain to me, you know, let's back up a little bit and equate to a story I heard. I heard this was an old Indian legend. It's an old legend. I heard that a Cherokee grandmother told it to her grandson. I've heard that it was made up by Jim Rohn or one, like, I've heard so many great things, but I love this story. And it's the tale of two wolves. And the way I heard it makes it sound so much better is that an Indian grandmother talking to her grandchild, and the grandchild says, "What's the definition of life, Grandma? How do I know if I'm doing good?" And the grandmother says, "Well, we have two wolves that live inside of us." And he goes, "Really? What kind of wolves?" And she said, "Well, one wolf is full of envy and greed. And one wolf gets scared and pretends they're strong, but they're really not. And one wolf doubts themselves and hangs around the wrong people, gets scared, plays small, and just settles." Wow, what about the other wolf? The other wolf focuses on their own growth. Their focus is on solutions. They focus on surrounding themselves with the right tribe. They focus on a different mindset and crushing beliefs and exploring new territory. And the grandson's like, "Oh my God, but Grandma, which wolf wins and runs your life?" And she says, "The one you feed." When I heard that story, which I know most all of you have heard, and I've heard it five different ways, I just tell it the way I like to hear it. That story gives me like this desire to make sure I'm feeding the right, for me, which wolf? For me, it's the inner villain and the inner hero. Which one am I feeding? Which one am I supporting? Which one am I acknowledging? Which one am I talking to? So again, I might use silly analogies, but it gives me the reference point to go, "Oh crap, the villain's in charge. That ain't happening. I'm not letting that be," right? So that's why I want you to play with me, play here full out. You know, it also reminds me of a story of a student. Oh my God, the student, I bet you she was a student of mine well over a decade ago. And the only reason she's on top of mind right now is because I saw her in a TV commercial 2 weeks ago with her husband. It was one of those commercials. You know the commercials where they come out with like a new drug for asthma and they're showing a couple and they're holding hands and they're camping? This couple, they were camping and they're building a fire and they're having fun. And underneath this great visual, they're telling you the 400,000 things you could die from. Do you know that? They tell you all the like disclaimer. But it was a great commercial and I was so happy to see her. Her name is Gina. And I was like, "Oh, you go, Gina." And I want to tell you her inner villain. Gina husband and her, both badasses, like I say that, like a true, my wife would call him a boss babe or a lady boss. But Gina decided, her husband had the job, that she got pregnant, her babies are old now, right, or older, she's a grandma now, but she decided to be a stay-at-home mom, and the best on the planet, like badass stay-at-home mom, and did a little piano training while she did that. But talk about, she was the manager of her house, and her husband got to do what he does, and she took care of the rest. And that was what she decided to do, and that was her belief. I'm a mom. That was her. I'll tell you when the villain came out. All of a sudden, the kids grew up, went to college, she did her job, they're amazing, got married, got degrees, got jobs, and all of a sudden the house was empty. And she was lost. She's like, well, what am I supposed to do now? And here's what I want to share with you. When she was a part of a course like this over a decade ago, her inner villain told her, you're 59 years old, you missed your window, you're not in that great shape anymore. You're not gonna go fulfill your dreams, start your own business. Come on, the kids know technology nowadays. You don't know technology. You gotta be on the internet way more and social media. That's what her villain was telling you. Know what her villain also told her? If you're gonna do something, she was considering going to be a greeter at Costco. You know, the door, work at the door to check people in and out. That's what the villain told her. And we were able to bust that villain. And I watched this woman who was beyond capable, go from this 59-year-old woman who looked her age, just being honest, looked like she was tired because she lost that vibe for life. Her kids were out, her job was, she felt like it was over. And when she flipped that, when she conquered that villain and the process we're gonna go through, when she identified this villain and then she conquered it and she awoke in the inner hero, oh my God. Watching Gina change, she physically changed. She did not look like the same woman. She dropped 15 years. She started her own business. She did so well. She did so well that her husband had wanted to be an actor his entire career in corporate America. She did so well creating revenue on a monthly basis that he was able to quit his job, the reason I'm telling you this story, and go take acting lessons and pursue his dream. And she covered the bills. She paid for her kids' weddings. She paid for her kids to go on vacation. Like, watching this woman come alive, and I'm friends with her for over a decade, and to watch her on TV, and now, last week, watch a nationally aired TV commercial and see her and her husband on this commercial. It was just so full circle. But the inner villain almost got her. And I want you to identify it and crush it. So we're gonna go through a little exercise here on how we can do that. So where does this inner villain come from? I think there's two things. There's external factors that come in and then they become internal factors. But we're gonna start with identifying this villain. So number one, where can that come into your life? Think about the things that can hold you back. I know this sounds really simple, but look at it this way. There are things that you do, all of us, that build your confidence, that fuel your state of mind, that build an inner hero. And there's other things that rob our confidence, kill our state of mind, and push us down, right? Some things build us, some things take us down. We have to be the protector of that information. Because if we let the wrong things in, it fuels the inner villain. It starts externally, but then it becomes internal and it lives with us. So the outside situation can be over and we're still living it in here. So I'm gonna go through just a few that have made a massive shift in my life. You guys ready? Number one, if you know anything about me, you've heard me say this before, but I'm gonna remind you again today. Number one is news. Now, I'm just looking for anything. Just think of anything. Use the filter of what robs your confidence, what robs your state of mind, what fuels the villain. To me, I've never in the history of the world watched the news and got done and felt amazing. I've never watched the news and said, oh my God, I feel amazing. Babe, you gotta hurry up. Come in here and watch this with me so we can be in a great state together. You watch the news, you get done, you're like, oh my God, is this where we are in the world? The world's going to hell in a handbasket. Like, to me, it is a filter of saying, we only have a certain amount of energy to give. We only have a certain amount of time to give. We only have a certain amount of enthusiasm. We create that. We only have a certain amount of confidence, courage. We can create it. But why do anything in your life that would take away from the things you need to achieve on another level? For me, that's the news. I've never watched the news and felt better or gained more confidence or felt like I had a hero living inside of me. So if that's on your list of things that don't empower you, you feel like I should be informed. Really? Or should that energy be used to change the economy in your home? Should that energy be used to fix race relations in your home, in your relation, in your community, your town, to fix poverty in your area? Like, we have a choice to observe and look at things we somewhat, most of the times, can't control that bring us down, rob our energy, rob our confidence, or we have the time to shut that off. Not only does it take time from you, it takes your state of mind and puts it through the ringer. So for me, this is my thing. I've been on a news diet for over a decade because I know when I watch commercials, I watch the news, it sucks me in and it puts me in a wrong state. So I want to protect my confidence. I want to protect my state of mind. I want to protect and fuel which wolf? The news fuels the wrong wolf for me. That's number one. Now, you could replace anything news. There might be something else that you do. Go to a certain bar with friends, hang out, like anything that robs it from me has to go on the list of things not to do or do less of. So that's number one is news. Number two, I've been talking about this for a long time, but it's really personal to me. And number two, I'm going to take a few minutes on this because it's important. I want to talk to you, like between us right now, is one of the biggest lies we've ever been told, ever, is to work on our weaknesses. Working on your weakness does nothing more than kill your confidence and kill your state of mind. When you work on something you're not good at, how do you feel? You feel amazing? You feel empowered? You know, we always have that thing is like, we got to work on this thing that we're not good on. Why? Why do we have to? Want to hear a crazy little secret? What if one of the biggest secrets to success is not working on your weaknesses? What if working on what you're already good at and becoming amazing at it is how you get to your next level of life? I'm not good at a lot of things. I still can't spell. If I literally typed you one paragraph and I didn't spell correct it, I promise you there'd be 30 misspelled words. I spell so bad that if the spell checker in Word or in an email could talk, it'd be like, dude, I have no clue what you're saying. Like literally, I will try to spell a word 3 different times so the spell check can pick it up and try to correct it. And it still finally, I just delete it and put a word like happy, joy, excited. Like, that's how bad I am. And I used to be so insecure, especially when I had teachers like Miss Thompson in 7th grade say, just sound it out, are you stupid or something? Like, literally. But I know that's not my gift. I know how to tell stories. So I might tell a story with a lot of misspelled words. If I tell a story good enough through authenticity to impact lives, I can pay someone who's great at spelling and editing to clean up my mess. And then I can impact the lives with my book, take that money and pay for my shortcomings. Now you might say, I don't have money to pay, but here's the part I want you to share with you. You might be able to barter. Maybe you're someone who's great at being organized, but just think on the creative side. Like my daughter will draw a picture. I'm like, oh my God, where did that come from? I couldn't think of that. She's creative. Intuitively creative in that way. I can't do that. Maybe you're the creative and someone else is the organizer. Can you swap? Don't try to get good. Listen, I mean, think about this. It's because we're taught in school, we have to be alone and figure things out. It's the biggest fraud we've ever been told. Taught to work on our weaknesses. What a lie. So we can feel crappy about ourselves. I mean, think about this. In life, if I'm good at math and you're good at science and someone else is good at something else, we just collaborate and we all rise, right? If I'm good at marketing and you're good at accounting and someone else is good at operations, we get together, we can start an amazing company. The way we're taught in school, we're supposed to be good at all of them. It's not possible. In school, if I was good at math and someone else was good at English and someone else with history, if we all got together and shared each other's answers and helped each other all get better, you know what that'd be called? Cheating. But in the real world, that's the only way we get ahead. Talk about a conflict. Talk about messing with your mind. It's like, I'm supposed to be good at all of it. Bullshit. I am so bad at so many things, but I got really good at a few things. And that's all I needed to live a life that I never thought was possible. You know, I got to tell you a story. There's a gentleman named Ned Hollowell. Ned Hollowell has been on Oprah 7 times. You might recognize the name. He's Harvard trained. He's a Harvard professor. And Oprah called him the world's leading ADD doctor, right? So I became friends with Ned, good dude. And I'm talking to Ned one time, and you know me, I'm like, well, you know, hopefully you know me now. might have a little ADD myself. And I wanted the answer, like, how do you cure so many people of ADD? And if they don't need meds, you get them off the meds. And he said, I just take a different approach. I'm like, okay, so what is that approach? He said, so let me give you an example. This is the story he told me a long time ago. He said, let's picture Johnny's in school. And teacher says, time to read today, Johnny, in class. And Johnny sits down and they say, read these 10 pages, we'll wait here. And they open a book, and all of a sudden Johnny's trying to read and he just can't sit there. His ADD's kicking in, he's looking around, he's trying to figure out something to do. It's a little uncomfortable. He starts tapping his foot and his teacher says, hey, Johnny, you better sit there and read, time's almost up. All of a sudden Johnny gets up. Now not only does he have ADD, he's a little hyper, so now he's got ADHD. And then we medicate him and we hope that he slows down. He said medication is for some people. He's not anti-medication. He just likes to do this other strategy first. He said, I take a different approach. You see, I talk to Johnny's family, friends, and teachers, and I find out what Johnny is good at. Sometimes it's his sports. Sometimes it's always one of his classes, right? He's good at math or history or art or science. He goes, I find out what Johnny's already good at, and we just help him. We collectively work together to help him be amazing at that. So Johnny's good at science. We get him science books. We help at home. We help with the teachers. We help friends that they can help. And all of a sudden, Johnny starts getting so good at science that you know what happens? Johnny's confidence goes up. His security goes up. He doesn't feel like he's going to be rejected or made fun of. He feels amazing about himself. His confidence is high. He goes, guess what? You fast forward 3 months later, Johnny's sitting in the classroom reading the book. He said, we had a confidence problem. He's like, ADD is a gift, Dean. You have it. And he literally looked at me. He goes, you have it. ADD is a gift. He goes, the biggest problem with ADD is you got a Ferrari engine and you have bicycle brakes. And I thought that was really funny. And he said, all I do is teach you how to put the brakes on. And when you have ADD and you got a Ferrari engine and you understand the brakes, it is an absolute gift. He said, but it's not a gift if you don't understand how to build the confidence. And that, it kind of anchored in, like his message anchored in with me so much, because I felt, how could I be a businessman when I can barely spell? How can I be a businessman when I have dyslexia and reading is really difficult? I listen to books. I watch videos, right? I speak from my heart. I don't have a script today. I have some notes here, but I don't have a script. Because that's me. That's my gift. I was judging myself by an outdated scorecard. Johnny was being judged by an outdated scorecard. Johnny could be brilliant at a million things if we fuel what he's good at. So what have you been holding on to? What have you been thinking you're not good at and you're trying to get better when you just got to ignore it and say, this is it. This is me. This is who I'm going to be. When time allowed, I would do high-end masterminds. You know, 20 people in a room, they'd pay a lot of money for a 3-day event. And I'd take them through, picture this experience. We get to spend all this time together. I'm in so many of your living rooms and this is amazing, but imagine if it was just 15 or 20 of us in a room and I could go around and talk to every single one of you and we could figure out where you are, where you want to go, why you want it. We did similar exercises that we're doing right now, except I was there to help. So I get around to Tom, and I would bet to say at the time, Tom is 65 years old. Let's just say, awesome dude, love the guy. So we get around to Tom, and at the time, Tom had got into real estate, and he had done 4 real estate deals, and he had averaged about $15,000 of profit now on each one of his deals. Now, he had retired, he was transitioning into this, and Tom wanted to take this to a whole nother level, and he was having so much fun. He was so good at finding deals and flipping them and making it happen. It was so cool. But when it gets around to Tom, I said, hey, what can I help you with? Of all the things he could ask me, all the things he can ask me. You know what Tom said? He goes, Dean, I am so unorganized. I'm so unorganized. I mean, I could clean my car and a week later it's a mess. 3 days later it's a mess. He goes, my home office, now that I'm doing this business from home, it looks like a bomb went off. I try to straighten it up and it looks bad again. He said, so when you know what I need to do? I need to get a filing cabinet and I need to just spend the day and fill out all those little tabs and get an organization process and he's telling me all these things he's gonna do. And when he was done, I looked at Tom and I said, hey, Tom, you done? I said, you're full of crap. And he's like, what do you mean? I said, you're not going to do those things. I said, Tom, how old are you? He said, you know, 65, 67. I said, can I be honest with you? You're going to be a slob and sloppy for the rest of your life. And he looked at me like, wow, I paid all that money to hear that. Thanks. And I said, but celebrate it. That's who you are. I said, I would bet to say, brother, that you probably got told you were sloppy by your mom, sloppy by your teachers, and maybe your wife feels that way now. And I watched him go from a smile to like emotional. He'd been carrying this baggage around of being unorganized and sloppy, and he wore it as like a scar. And I could tell, like literally about to have tears come out of his eyes. And I said, time to let it go, man, because you know what? Tom, you've got 4 deals under your belt. You've only been doing this for a few months. You have a unique ability of finding deals. He goes, oh my God, yeah, I find deals. He got all excited. I do this. This is how I find these deals. I said, you have a great unique ability of putting people together to rehab. Oh my God, yes, I use my cousin and this guy and this guy and this guy. And he's on fire. I said, what are you doing next? He's like, oh, I got 2 more deals in the pipe. This brilliant, amazing guy who's doing this incredible things in his retirement has the ability to ask me any question, and he wants to fix this broken part of him that means nothing. I said, Tom, let me ask you a question. What if you did just one extra of those deals a year? One extra. Do you think you could take that money and pay someone to come in and organize and structure and keep you on track? And I know that sounds so simple. You're like, oh yeah, why wouldn't everybody do that? But they don't. We just think, no, I have to be better at organization. No, go do another deal. Generate revenue and pay someone to do it. You know, I had the ability to follow up with Tom. He had a breakthrough. He had tears in his eyes. His eyes were filling up. I should say his eyes filled up with tears. And I helped him let go of that, holding on till he was bad at something and let it go. And I let him recognize how great he was at something. So during the break or during that night, he went and called his wife and told her. And she got emotional and she apologized to him. And she said, I guess she was finishing a school career. She was a teacher and she was an organized teacher. And he said to her, one of them said, why don't I do it for you as long as I get a shopping spree once a month? And literally we found out, I could get emotional. We found out like a month later, 2 months later, that she was organizing everything. She got all the receipts. He wasn't in charge of any of it. He went and did his thing. He found the deals. He got them rehab. He flipped it. She had the organization, the paperwork, the title. And they made this magical team. And he never had to worry about his weakness ever again. What weakness are you focusing on? What's holding you back? You don't get confidence when you work on things that you're not good at. I'm going to encourage you to go deeper on what you're already good at, to realize that there's another level of life waiting for you when you realize that the strengths you have is really your superpower. And all we have to do to invoke that superpower is to fuel the right wolf, to fuel the inner hero, and recognize these pieces that fuel that inner villain, that tell us that we can't. You know, the modern word in today's vocabulary is imposter syndrome. I've heard that more in the last 3 years than anything I've ever heard. I do it, but I have imposter syndrome. I feel like I'm an imposter. Where does that come from? Like, it's not just imposter, go upstream a little. It's that inner villain, killing your confidence, feeling like you're not good enough. What about if we bust that inner villain, raise our confidence, then imposter syndrome just fades away. It just dissolves. That's just a fact. That's why I hope you see this as we go through this training. I want us to be, as part of the accelerated success formula, and you can hopefully you can come back and access this for 20 more years, 30, 50 more years, is I want you to realize that if we go upstream a couple notches, it solves so many problems, right? I mean, you see that in the medical field. Some people have things like diabetes that they need medicine, of course, but some people realize they can just take the medicine or they can go upstream and change their diet and go more plant-based and stop the sugars. And in 3 months, they're off the medication. What'd they do? They went upstream, right? There's a story, I think Tony told this, about a doctor pulls up to a river and there's people floating down the river, almost drowning. And this doctor's like, oh my God. And he runs out into the water and he saves somebody. And they're by a medical school. All of a sudden, 2 more doctors, 3 more doctors. And all of a sudden, they're all going as fast as they can. And there's people just coming by in the water and they're trying to save them. And all of a sudden, another doctor comes and says, come on, help us. And he starts walking back to his car, and they're like, dude, we need your help. Where are you going? He's like, I'm going to drive upstream and see who's throwing these people in. Think about that one. That's one that really gets your head spinning, right? We're in here trying to fix. I see you, Mary. I see that big smile, right? Like, we're trying to fix some of these things. And what I tried to do is show you a different perspective of going upstream. You want more success and more financial freedom? These are the things that get you there, not the magical money machines. You want more happiness, more abundance? These are the pieces upstream that if we work on them, when they flow down, we are stopping it from happening in the first place. And we have the unfair advantage. That's what you're getting here. Those of you who are part of VIP, getting this course for life, you paid for unfair advantage. You paid for speed, right? And again, that's what I really try to obsess on. Okay, so number one, news or anything like news that robs your confidence, feeds the villain. Number two, working on our weaknesses and just stop it. Let it go. Think of Tom. Think of what Ned Hollowell said. This next one, this is so obvious. You've heard it before. And see, I know some of you who've followed me for a decade, maybe even two, you might know the answer. But what's the most expensive advice in the world? Ah, there we go. Look at, there we go. Lauren and Stefan and those of you at home, I hope you guessed right. Bad advice, free advice, wrong advice. I'd like to you think right now, what has bad advice cost you in your life? Your broke friend telling you how to get rich or how not to play small. Your single friend telling you how to end that relationship or why it's screwed up, right? Think about the time you wanted to have that invention. You thought about something, oh my God, this could change the world. This, I know this is the thing that could change the world. And you get all excited. You want to, I want to get a patent. I want to do a TV commercial. I'm going to fly to China if I have to and get this thing made. And then you tell someone in your life and you're like, you know, it's coming. You got to get a patent. And if you're going to get a patent, somebody probably already did it. Guaranteed. Somebody probably already did this before. And then you're going to fly to China. Who's going to build that? Oh, and you're going to do a TV commercial? Okay, that's going to cost you. And people throw out things like, that'll cost you $1 million. It'll never happen. Someone will steal your idea. And you might not agree with them right there, but it's like cumulative. Bad advice is cumulative, right? So they tell you that, and then somebody else questions, and all of a sudden you're sitting home and you go, yeah, maybe that's not such a good idea. And then what happens a year later? You see your idea on TV making someone else a gajillionaire. True? Let me know if anything like that's ever happened to you, right? The most costly advice in the world is someone, I guarantee there's someone said, you're going to spend 2 days on a training with who? Dean Graziosi? Oh, that guy that works with Tony and does this? Ah, come on. Let's just get to work and get it done. Guaranteed. Some of you had somebody question that you're here, right? You're going to have somebody, if you ask, you might ask your husband or a friend, hey, should I buy this course and keep like, nah, you're getting it for free. Just watch it. It ain't going to make that big a difference. Bad advice, the most costly advice in the world, because it's the opportunity cost. If you don't have these capabilities, if you don't follow your gut, if you listen to people that are giving you advice, they're not qualified, you will get the results they have. And that's more costly than anything in the world because you've already missed way too many opportunities from listening to the wrong people. There are things I'm teaching you today that you'll learn throughout this course, the stuff I'll film when we're done. It took me 20 years to figure out. And in those 20 years, you know how much I failed? You know how many stressful nights? In my 20s, I had a bleeding ulcer because I freaked out so much worrying about things. Like, we've all been through this journey. What I'm giving you at the end are the things that worked and letting you know about the things that didn't. But it took me 20, 30, 35 years to figure some of this stuff out that you get like that. And the biggest problem is sometimes, people discredit advice. I want to tell you, take advice from those who are playing the game at the highest level possible, who've already been there, who accomplished what you have. I don't want to take advice from my friend who's got a miserable relationship and he's telling me what to do with mine. I literally go and interview people that have been married for 20 or 30, 40 years, and they're still holding hands, and they still stare at each other. I want to know how they did it. I see someone whose kids are 14 and 16 and people say, oh, teenagers don't talk to you. And they're all bonded as a family and they're laughing and joking. And they hang out every weekend and the kids would rather be with their parents than their friends at the mall. I go interview them. I don't interview the person that says, teenage years. Wait till your daughter's 14. You won't see her again until she's 18. Bullshit. I'm not listening to you because that's not the relationship I want with my daughter. So I'm going to interview 100 people if I have to on how they had a good relationship with their teenager, right? Bad advice has cost you so much. A story in my own life. I got to tell you this one. This is, I used to do infomercials, right? Because that was the only way to communicate with people and get my messages and share my books and things with people, right? So I'm doing an infomercial on my book of 10 or 12 years ago. And I do this big fancy infomercial. I fly all over the country and do this on a private jet, did all this crazy stuff, and the show didn't work. And it was beautiful, but it was more of a show than, anyway, long story short, I'm doing another one of these masterminds that I told you I used to do, 15, 20 people. And they paid a lot to be there. And the common thread that these people had were bad advice, unqualified advice. Like, I'm giving someone advice in this group on how to achieve what they want to achieve because I've achieved it. Not because I'm a dreamer, not because I made it up. I'm looking into my past 20 years, I extracted what worked and I'm giving it to you, and they're saying, yeah, but you know, my cousin, I've been friends with her forever and she just said, or my mom just said, and these people aren't trying to be bad, they're trying to protect you with their bad advice, right? So I was so frustrated. I gotta tell you like it is. I was just so frustrated. I was in Utah doing this event. Jump on plane, I get back to Phoenix, I call my team on the way, I said, listen, I wanna film a new infomercial about my new book, and just set it up quick. And literally they set it up like this, one camera, and behind me, our set wasn't ready. We were moving into a new office. Behind me, they just took a bookshelf, put a bookshelf behind me, filled it with books. I said, that's all I need. And I sat just like this, and I did an infomercial. And infomercials like that didn't work back then. It was usually big production and wait, you get more. Remember the call to actions and the graphics and the flying and the this and the that, and wait, we're gonna drop the price and drop the price and drop the price. I didn't. I was just frustrated with this bad advice. And I do this show and I'm talking from my heart just like I am now. I'm animated like I am now. I'm enthusiastic like I am now. And I said, listen, this isn't a magic overnight money machine. I just want to show you how to create the success in your life you want. And there's the book. And there was nothing fancy. I just said, you can go to the bookstore, you can call below and grab it for $19, right? But there was a part where I said this. I said, and what frustrates me more than anything is the most costly advice in the world is bad advice. You're taking advice from your broke friend telling you how to get rich or how not to get rich. You're taking advice from your single friend how to fix your relationship. Bad advice is the worst advice in the world. I said, I have to tell you, I love my parents more than anything. This is exactly what I said. I love my parents more than anything, but they've been married 9 times between them. They don't know how to do marriage right. They only know how to do it wrong. When I want advice about marriage, I don't ask my parents because they only know how to mess it up. I said, when I advise about a lot of other things, I go to them, but not for marriage because they only have a perspective of how it doesn't work. And I went on. I was in a flow. I kept going. Forgot I even said it. No joke. That infomercial should have never worked. It was just me on camera without all the fancy bells and whistles. My team edits it. I send it to our media buyers. I said, I don't think this is going to work. And ended up being the biggest show I'd ever done in my life, ever. It helped be a part of that book selling almost 1 million copies. But here's the part I forgot, that little segment. And I'll tell you the funny side of it. About 3 months later, the phone rings and it's my mom, you know, comes up. I'm like, hey, mom. I pick up the phone and my mom, the only thing she says is, really? I'm not embellishing any of this. She said, really? And I said, what, mom? She goes, really? You need it. She goes, I see your infomercial 7 days a week, every hour of the day, telling the world your mother was married 5 times. She's like, no one in our family knows I've been married 5 times. Her favorite aunt was Aunt Dorothy, and she calls her Aunt Dot. She goes, Aunt Dot had no idea. She does now. I'm like, but what'd you think of the rest of the show, mom? It's doing really well. We're impacting lives all over the world. No exaggeration, I'm not kidding you, not that you can buy forgiveness, but sometimes you can buy forgiveness. I bought my mom a brand new car 2 days later, and I buy my mom a brand new car every 3 years. I see you laughing at me, Valerie, it's absolutely true. I bought her a new car, I said I was sorry, I said, mom, that's how I sold it to her. Mom, it's not only fueling my business, this book is helping change lives all over the world, and if that story helps people see it, you okay with it? Can I leave it? And my mom is such a sport. She said, okay. But that's how important this is. And I mean that. Like, what advice are you getting, right? Sometimes Tony and I, the World Summit, some of you won tickets. I hope you guys get to come with us. It's October. We're going to do it again. So be on the lookout for it. I'm not selling it right now. Tony and I are doing that World Summit. We sold out at 10,000 people and we got all the screens around us. And Tony or myself, one of us said, you know, or I think I did. I was like, who in here had someone in their life tell them they were crazy for coming to this event? And like half the room raised their hand. It's like, Oh my God, someone thought they're protecting you and they're robbing you from the capabilities that actually get you to where you want to go. So you must have a filter and understand where advice comes from. And you might have a mom who loves you to death who wants to give you this advice. It's okay. Just become Teflon. If you can't push the person out, then just let it fall off you, because one thing I love to think about too is when I see somebody give me advice, I will immediately think, if I woke up tomorrow morning and I looked in the mirror and I had their life, would I be happy? And I want to be honest with you, 100 out of 100 times, I wouldn't be. So why would you take advice from someone where you wouldn't replace your life with theirs, right? If, and not that you want to be someone else, but if you want their business, right? If you want to play tennis, you want advice from someone who is a pro or a professional teacher, not your Aunt Edna, because she's watched every tennis match possible for the last 40 years and has a lot of opinions. Right? I know this sounds obvious, but we still let this seep into our lives. You wanna kill this villain, right? Look at the villain this way. I heard a story, and I don't remember exactly when I heard it, but I heard a story about a guy who went to a third world country, right? And he went there to share his time and contribute and help and build houses and things like that. This is a story I heard a long time ago. So this is, I remember the high level part. Long story short, he came back from doing this incredible work, just started feeling off. And for months, just not feeling the best, a little tired, was turning 45 and figured, just maybe it's 45. And he didn't realize that while he was there, he picked up a parasite. But for the 6-8 months that he was just feeling off, everything seemed heavier and cloudier, and he didn't know. But the moment he identified it was a parasite, he already started feeling better. Then when he went through the process to kill the parasite, then all of a sudden he was back feeling better than ever before in his life. I want you to think of that same philosophy here. The reason I'm going through sharing how this villain is created, and some of you, if you've been following me for years, you may have heard this, but how often do you need to hear it? All the time. How often do you go to the gym? All the time. When we identify this inner villain as a parasite, and we know what fuels it, we know what creates it, and as we evolve here, we're going to know what kills it. Then all of a sudden, you don't have to live with this parasite. You don't have to live with this thing that's cost you too much in your life, who's held you back from too many incredible things in your life, and we can purge it. And that's what we're doing here together. And then the last one, after bad advice, there's one more. And you can add anything to this list. You can add anything to this list that fuels that inner villain. But the last one is the stories that we got from someone else. There are stories that live inside of us. Now, we're going to go way deeper on beliefs and shifting and new stories and new beliefs. We're going to spend a lot of time on that in the next couple sections because it's that important. But we're going to start that momentum here of what are the stories from someone else that feed your inner villain? Think about this. My dad was born during the Great Depression, right? Had nothing. But the way his family brought him up was that when things are that bad, you just find something and protect yourself. And you never go into debt. Never borrow money. Never leverage. If you can't pay for it for cash, do not use it. If you could do something yourself, don't dare hire someone. They were drilled into my dad. And those two things alone kept my dad from being wealthy. My dad is one of the smartest people I've ever met. But he was afraid to borrow money, and he did everything himself. Okay? Where I had to fight that because he tried to drill that into me, but I realized when I started doing real estate that if I could get into a property good enough and leverage the bank's money or partner's money and still make a profit, I could take the money and go buy a second piece of property. My dad never had more than one or two properties. I've had properties over 1,000 individual houses because I borrow just enough so where they were profitable and take the money and go do another one and borrow the money and go do another one and borrow the money and go do another one. I leverage that. But my dad had a story that wasn't real. And then the other thing too is my dad, I remember a fight my dad and I got in. He's kind of a little bit of a hothead back in the day he was. And I had one of my first apartment houses, and my dad came up to the apartment house. I lived in it. And my dad pulled in on a Saturday, and I had someone else mowing my lawn. Oh my God, my dad lost his freaking mind. Like, oh, Mr. Big Shot, can't mow his lawn. You're done now. Like literally, he was talking to me probably the way his dad talked to him. And my dad's a great dude. But he was mean and called me names and got so mad. he got in his truck and he sped out so quick that I remember he spun the tires in the gravel and he dented the whole side of my damn car. Like, I'm like, really, Dad? Oh my God. Like, I was so pissed off. But let me just tell you what led up to that. This apartment house that I owned had 10 apartments in it. I lived in one of them. That damn lawn was huge. Between weed whacking and mowing and my allergies, I would cry all day Saturday. It would take me the full day to mow this lawn. And at the same time, I paid this kid, Doug Smith, who still works with me 30 something years later. I paid him $50 to mow the lawn. Now, during that time, on the Saturday, I would go to my collision shop. I would sell a car. I'd fix a car. I'd go work on a real estate deal. Those Saturdays would make me thousands of dollars. And my ROI, it cost me $50 to relieve 4 hours of mowing and weed whacking. And those 4 hours were spent on things, getting great at something I'm good at, selling a car, fixing a car, fixing an apartment. My ROI was off the charts. My dad couldn't see it. You know why? His dad or his mom gave him a story that screwed him up for years. What story did someone else give you that's still living inside of you that's BS, that's cost you too much? That's another inner, external piece that lands on the inside, right? It was a story from the outside world, but it's living in your brain. You might think to yourself, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to start my own business. Well, simultaneously, you have a story because your parents tried to go in business when you were a kid and they went bankrupt and lost their house and went into foreclosure. And in the back of your mind, the story is, try your own business, you go broke. So you're fighting for another level, and all of a sudden you have a story telling you, you're gonna go broke, you're gonna go broke. Oh my God, like, okay, I'll just stay still and hope the world fixes it. Nobody's coming to fix it. You have to crush this villain. It's already cost you too much. That's why I wanted to spend this much time identifying, because if I just told you, hey, you got this inner self-doubt, let's crush it. When it comes back and you don't know where it came from, it'll be like the parasite, it keeps coming back. But you know if you eat a certain thing, you get the parasite, you stop eating it. You know if you have an allergy to peanuts, if you eat it, you get sick, you stop eating the peanuts. But most people don't know where the villain comes from, so you think you're breaking it, but you're filling yourself up. That's why I spend the time to do what? What did I tell you I was gonna do in this course? Go upstream. We're gonna go upstream. Solve the problem upstream. See who's throwing the people in the water so you never have the problem at the end. Okay, that's that section. Now we're gonna get to a little assignment. The exercises are, get amazing at what you're already good at, the bad advice reflection guide, and the last one, forget all the rules. So now let's get to a tool. We're gonna take a break here. But the first tool is called Get Amazing at What You're Already Good At exercise. And I want you to just write down some of the things of what you're good at and how can you improve those skills. And some of these things you might not realize could be the foundation of your next level of wealth, abundance, joy, happiness. For example, who would have ever thought that me sharing what I know, like me being a teacher, come on, seventh grade, I could barely read. Like, that's a true story. I don't have a degree. I didn't go to college. I still have dyslexia. Reading is very difficult. But I'm really good and obsessed on impacting people's lives. I hope you feel it. I hope you feel my level of authenticity. And I'm really good at trying out everything possible because I'm not afraid to fail. And I know all the mistakes I made and I calculate all of them and I bring to you what works. So I might be bad at a lot of things, but I'm really good at helping people in a really simple way get to another level of life. That's all it took for me. So I know I'm good at inspiring, impacting people's lives. How do I get better? A video a day, practice more, get in front of an audience, take uncomfortable action, right? So what are you good at? And here you can even think about, what are you good at that also could potentially cut you a bigger check or give you more freedom, right? I'm really good at being on video because I do through authenticity. I teach people how to be better on video. And most of the time, not in a course, I just help people and I help my students, right? So I would love for you to decide. Don't think about what you're bad at. That's not what this tool is. It's get amazing at what you're already good at exercise. Start writing down the things you're good at, and I promise you, those will fit into you 4.0, your next level. So that's exercise number one. Okay, the second part of this exercise, and again, if you have these printed out, great. If not, then just do it on your journal, is the bad advice reflection guide. My team is great at putting names on these. So what does that mean? Really, what bad advice have you adopted? What bad advice have you heard? What bad advice is a part of you and you didn't even realize it? Like what I was talking about with my dad and stories and things like that, right? And then how has that bad advice cost you? What is that, you know, talk about the invention you were gonna do, the guy you were gonna go after and your friend said you're dumb and then you found out he's a freaking awesome dude, right? The job you were gonna take, but your family said you should play it safe. What has bad advice, what's bad advice you adopted? What does it cost you? This just stings a little. It's just fuel for our next section. Then the third one is forget all the rules. Basically is what are, and again, you could use this or you could use your paper, but what are some of the stories, not the bad advice, what are some of the stories that are yours now that came from a grandparent, came from a teacher, came from an ex, came from a current spouse? You know, sometimes people are like, I'm Republican, whatever, I'm Democrat. How come? I think my parents are, right? Like, I'm Catholic, why are you Catholic? My parents were Catholic. Doesn't mean anything's wrong with being liberal, Republican, Democrat, conservative, Catholic, you know, Mormonism, Buddhism, whatever you are, it doesn't matter. All I'm saying is you might be that because that's what your parents were. You might have limiting beliefs or a story someone else gave you. We're gonna go deep on limiting beliefs. This is just touching it slightly. You might have a story inside of you that someone else gave you and we just gotta recognize it. So what's a story? If you got the worksheet under limiting beliefs, but you can make that your story. What is the story someone else gave you and what effects has that had on your life? Here's what we're gonna do. If you're watching live, we're gonna take, I don't know how long, we're gonna take a 15 minute break, okay? No, let's make it 10, okay. Let's make it 10. I think that's enough. And if you can't finish it, we'll do another time. So we're going to take a 10 minute break. If you're at home watching, if you're watching the course, you can hit pause for 10 minutes. But do this exercise. Do all three sheets because this is the foundation for you 4.0.